Why do you say that, Father? You aren't afraid, are you?
No. But I respect some of the superstitions of others. Often they are founded in fact.
Broadcasting from our Sanctum Sanctorum in Venice, California, this is the Sixth Sense Society. I'm your host, Krista, here with our producer, Michael. And today, we welcome to the show for the first time two investigators from TAPS West Coast. We have Jerry Boutine, who is the team lead, and Lauren Parker, who is the lead investigator and historian. And we're going to get to know them and ask a little bit about the TAPS organization. But before we get started, Michael has a few announcements.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. I'm afraid we tried to live stream, but there was a problem with YouTube, so we had to record it instead. So I apologize to those of you who are hoping to join us live. Next week, we're going to finish off our Paranormal October with David Harvey, and we'll be covering some more topics with him having to do with everything that goes bump in the night. And then we'll be into November, and it'll be our last couple shows before hiatus in December. So you can get all the information on our website, sixthsensesociety.com, S-A-X-T-H, all spelled out. While you're there, buy us a coffee on Ko-Fi. And the most important thing, go to YouTube and look up our channel and click like and subscribe. And if you are in the car, you can always listen to us as a podcast. Just search Sixth Sense Society on wherever you get your podcast. We should pop right up. So we've got so much ground to cover, and I'm excited to have the TAPS folks on today. So I'm going to kick it back to you. So take it away, Krista.
Great. Thank you, Michael. And welcome to the show, Jerry.
Thank you. Great
and
to be here.
Thank you. And Lauren.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So I think it's always good to sort of get a sense of why people got involved in the paranormal. And so I wanted to ask each of you, what drew you to become a paranormal investigator, whether it's something long ago or more in your recent history? I know both of you have been involved for quite a while, so recent could be 10 years. So let's start with you, Lauren.
Well, I've always been interested in the paranormal and, you know, is there that life after death? What happens when we leave the earth? And it wasn't until I moved into my home and my current home that I'm here in now in 2009, and this home had activity. And so actually it was TAPS that had come out and done a couple of investigations here, and that's how I became part of the team.
Wow. And how long ago was that, did you mention?
2009 I moved in.
2009.
So, yep. And thought I was going crazy, and became real interested at that point. So.
Oh, very cool. So very personal. How about you, Jerry?
For me, it was my folks got separated and ultimately divorced when I was about 7 or 8. And my dad moved into this old converted 1920s-ish big mansion that was converted in smaller apartments. And I had my first paranormal experience there, where the day we moved in, I'll never forget this. The day we moved in, we were helping my dad. We parked out front. We were loading stuff in, and we wanted to go back and see his garage. And there's a bunch of activity. And we walked back there, and I remember walking past and seeing this old soaked up glass. And I always remember there was a hole in the glass, but there was a rag stuffed through it. And we came around the corner, and in my dad's parking space was a car, and there was a dead man, and it turned blue. It's the only way I can describe him. And it was the owner. It was the owner of the building committed suicide in my dad's garage the day we moved in. Obviously, my dad ushered me away from there real quick. But when I went to sleep in his house, and I woke up in the middle of the night feeling like something was watching me. And I opened my eyes and I saw a shadow. There was a big picture window, and I just saw like a shadow standing, watching over me. And it wasn't scary. It was weird. It didn't seem bad. And then it kind of just went away. And I didn't really tell anyone. But from that moment on, I noticed I was very interested and all things paranormal, whether it was watching The Ghost and Mr. Chicken or, you know, anything that had ghosts, I was about, and delved real deep into it. And the Amityville Horror kind of changed a lot of things for me. So from that point on, jumped in. I've been with TAPS now. God, I mean, I've been investigating for over 16 years now, which is crazy. Mm. And been with TAPS the majority of that time. So it's been a great experience. And that's, yeah, that's, I love that, Lauren, you know, some, we actually, we've had two clients that we've brought on. Lauren was the first. And then one of our other members, Corey, he was a GM of a place that we were investigating as well. So.
Wow, that's a very dramatic beginning to your paranormal. I don't think I've ever heard quite a story like that, you know, it really would stay with you. So, but nevertheless, it was part of your journey, is part of your journey too. So tell me a little bit about what each of you do on TAP. So you, we'll continue with you, Jerry. You're the lead, team lead. So what does that mean exactly?
Everything kind of falls on me as far as like, I run the show at this time. So I'm also doing a lot of the case management. So when people need something, like we just actually have someone who just reached out from Northern California, which I'm going to set up an investigation to go up there. So people reach out on our website, which is tapswestcoast.com or tapswestcoast.org. They both go to the same place. And I'll take a look at the case. I'll talk to the client, see if it's something that we can help them with. And then I'll set it up, reach out to our investigator, say, hey guys, we need a team to go up and, you know, put together a team. We'll go up, do the investigation, make sure that all evidence is reviewed, compile a report for the client, meet with them and kind of go over our findings. Also lately we've been doing Comic-Cons. We actually just did Tombstone Paracon, their first Paracon this last year, which was, earlier this year, which was a blast. Got to investigate a mine and kind of change the foreman's point of view forever. But yeah, so kind of, I kind of run the show. So all the responsibility falls on me, and also protecting the TAPS name, because our protocols are, we hold ourselves, we are more of a scientific based team and we have certain protocols we meet. We don't charge for our investigations. We have certain criteria that we meet and standards we hold. So we're not the, the fly by night. Hey, I saw a couple shows, so now I'm an investigator. So I'm going to go out and make things worse at someone's home because I don't know what I'm doing. But boy, it was really fun while I did it. You know, we try to make things better when we leave. I guess that's a little bit of what I do. So. Mm-hmm.
And Lauren, I know you're an investigator and a historian. So talk about sort of both these roles.
Yeah, so I'm the history nerd of the team. So when we get a case, a lot of times, sometimes people will think they know who is causing the activity. And I research that. A lot of times people have no idea about the history of their property or past residents, et cetera. And again, I research that too. I don't like to know a whole lot before I go in, just because I want to kind of research with, I don't want to be looking for something just to, you know, follow the narrative, unless they specifically obviously want me to find something. But it's really neat when you can sort of match what's happening to the client and find that historical data to back it up. That's kind of what I do. Try to connect the dots.
Yeah, I know the historian angle has become, it seems more significant in, you know, I don't know how long, but then maybe in the early days, but that seems to be a very important role. And I guess different people do, like some people like to research before and like you'd like to do it afterwards. So you'll be open-minded, it sounds like, too, and not trying to, like you said, put it into a box or something.
Right. Right.
So the other thing I'm kind of curious about, too, is how large an organization is TAPS? I mean, there's the Atlantic. Isn't that where it started on the East Coast? Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. The primary group is the Atlantic Paranormal Society, the TAPS. They're in Rhode Island. So they have their home team there. And then you have the show team, which is what we see on Ghost Hunters. And then we're the West Coast team. And then there's also a lot of subsidiaries that would be considered TAPS family member groups. So there are other paranormal teams, you know, scattered throughout the country that meet the criteria, our standards, that we have a whole set of protocols. And if they're deemed someone that would be a good fit, then they get to fly the TAPS banner, as it were. But you also know that if you reach out to one of these groups, integrity, confidentiality, knowledge. It's all there. You're not, like I said, it's the danger we've had in this town. Not, this is no disparagement to anyone out there, but because of the influx of so many paranormal shows out there right now, is that some are just, they're doing stuff for pretty much for ratings. They might push the envelope a little bit. They might falsify things. They might do whatever just for the ratings. And the problem that I'm finding now is that that's making a lot of people think that, you know, a piece of dust flying in front of their infrared security camera is a demon coming to take over their body and soul. So it's become kind of a, it's made it more difficult for teams that are legitimately trying to further the science of it, trying to find answers, trying to help people, because some of these teams, they get in and they damage someone's confidence. I'll use a great example. We had a case actually at an Elks Lodge. I won't mention which, but it was an Elks Lodge. And we had gone, had an amazing experience, lots of activity, and really lovely people. And being Elks, obviously people that cared and you know, gave to the community. And we were invited back. And I think it was like 6 or 8 months later, we went back. And we went back and nothing was happening. Nothing. Like, you could feel the presence, but it was like it was in the corner, like it didn't want to engage with us. And we were just kind of baffled, like, why? Because at the time, one of our team members, she was sensitive. So she and I were kind of in tune. And she's like, I feel like they're watching us, but they don't want to talk to us. And so we were kind of a little bit flustered with it. And then the head of the lodge, and I think under Elks, I think they're called the Exalted Ruler, I believe, or Exalted Leader. But she came in. She had been working. She came to join us. And we found out they had let another paranormal team in a couple of weeks earlier. And she goes, that's strange, you know, because they got attacked. They had stuff thrown at them. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? What do you mean they got attacked? Like, everything there was so benevolent, I can't imagine anyone getting attacked. And what it was, fortunately, we had a guest with us who knew of this team. And the lead investigator on that team was a wannabe paranormal TV star. He provoked, disrespectful, did all these things. And so they came in provoking and being very just not the way you should investigate. So when I found that out, I wasn't real happy. I made, in a very respectful way, my opinion known. But after that, I went back into the lodge room and I made an apology to the spirits that were there, saying, listen, we heard what happened. I apologize. That's never acceptable behavior. We're here months ago. We had great interaction with you. But I do apologize for those people, because there's no excuse for that. From that moment on, we had activity off the hook until we finished.
Wow.
So nothing for 3 hours. And then once the apology was made, it's all about respect. You know, it's like, how do you want people to talk? If you pass on, do you want someone to be yelling at you? I mean, show people respect. It's the same. So, so with TAPS, that's what we try. We try to keep things at the higher standard and with respect, and our protocols that are in place.
Yeah, that's a topic we've discussed with some of the other smaller groups that have come on our show. They totally agree with you about the idea of being very respectful and polite and not trying to be confrontational. And it makes sense, but I suppose, you know, someone started this at some point and people imitate. Lauren, why don't you weigh in on this topic?
Yeah, I think, you know, my general rule of thumb is treat folks the way you would like to be treated, whether it doesn't matter if you're living or dead. I mean, when we go in to especially someone's private home, you know, we could be talking to their grandmother, you know, and I always just talk to anybody with respect.
Now, I am curious, you talked, Gary, a little bit about one investigation. Lauren, do you have any sort of memorable, either positive or negative, or just something that stuck with you over the years that you've been investigating?
Well, I mean, my house is my most personal. And that's why I love the TAPS team, is because we really... I get to see it from both sides as a client and now being with the team, and they really did just sort of validate everything that I thought, you know, I truly thought I was going crazy for a while. And it was so nice to have someone come in, validate what I was feeling, and not only, you know, validate my feelings, but then see it themselves too, and hear it themselves. And, you know, and they were so non-judgmental and so sweet. And it really just did feel like instant family. Mm. And, you know, that helped me a ton. It really did. And I'm forever grateful to the team. And so to me, that's my most memorable investigation, because obviously it was so personal.
Is there still activity there?
Oh yeah. But I think, you know, before I didn't know what to do. I mean, I'm not kidding. I think, Jerry, how many people did I have in this house before even taps came in? I had 7 electricians coming and checking all of the, you know, the wiring in my house. I had, I had a Native American healer that had come in. I've had friends that come in and try to, you know, sage the house. I've had psychics in here. I mean, I was just trying anything I could. So, I've learned now kind of just how to deal with it, and that just because there may be activity, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily a bad thing, and it doesn't have to be a scary thing. And now I got to be honest, I don't really even notice it half the time anymore. I'll have guests over and they'll be like, "What was that?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's just happens all the time."
So you have electrical things that go on, lights or television?
Yeah, all of the above. If it's an electronic, it's happening here.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yep. And you recently had a plumbing thing.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, we were in Tombstone, actually.
Yeah, Tombstone. Yeah.
Yes. And my faucets will sometimes just turn on by themselves. And so I had somebody here house sitting for me. Oh, my son is coming home. House sitting for me. And he calls and is sending pictures and going, "Your bathroom flooded," and nobody was home at the time. And I said, "Oh yeah, I should warn you that, you know, faucets tend to turn on by themselves." And he's like, "What?" And you know, it's just stuff like that that you don't really think to tell people, because, you know, they probably wouldn't house it for you. Yeah,
maybe that's true. Well, that would be an interesting job. People that specialize in house sitting for people that have haunted houses.
Oh, I like it.
That could be a new angle.
You know, there's a market for that somewhere. I think there's a market.
I think so too. If I was a young person needing to house sit, that's what I would consider. You have to travel a little, probably. You know,
I hear you.
Exactly. So I know at the beginning, before we started the show, Jerry, you mentioned about actually investigating or going into a mine. And did you want to share some of the stories about that?
Yeah. When we were up in Tombstone, wonderful. The people of Tombstone are amazing. The city put this together. It was the first Paracon. They're doing another one coming up in April. We did ours in May. We won't be back at this next one, but they've got some other great teams that'll be there. Just the town itself is kind of spectacular. Like, it's just, they've embraced the history. The people are lovely. And what happened was, we were doing a VIP tour with the VIP paranormal, you know, guests. And we were supposed to go to the mine, and the foreman of the mine, Robert, phenomenal guy. We go, and we're just supposed to go to the opening of the mine, like at the entrance. But there was actually a rodeo taking place next door, so it was very loud. So he's like, "Is that noise going to be a problem?" I said, "Well, you know, it could be." It's like, "You want to go in?" And I'm like, "Hell yeah, let's go in." So he took us 110 feet down into the ground, and we got to investigate. And we start having, I do very well with flashlights, where the flashlights turn on and off in response to questions. We set up all kinds of stuff. We had all kinds of activity. Mm-hmm. But I set flashlights, and we were getting conversation going, and I felt it start to get colder behind me. So one of the guests, who was also with the Taps family up in Porterville, another amazing team, he actually had this device, and it's a laser grid, but it measures temperature, but it'll pinpoint where the temperature is changing So as opposed to just being a thermometer in the room, this lays out a grid and it says, oh, over on this point right here, it's dropping. So right behind me, basically, it pointed out right behind me, the temperature was dropping. And another investigator with us felt it as well. And I watched Robert's eyes just get kind of like uncomfortably wide and as he's processing, because when we walked out, he and I had a talk and he said, the temperature in the mine doesn't change. It's constant. It could be 120 above or 30 below above. It's always a constant temperature in the mine. He's never seen the temperature change before.
Wow.
So what we did is on the next time in, I made sure I asked if they were for, you know, if they were there protecting, watching over them, you know, and appreciated them keeping their memory alive. And they did. So they're very protective spirits. It's very good. And so now he's kind of embracing it and learning to live with them. But highly recommend the chance go.
Was that the first time he's had that investigated?
I think they had some. Some of the locals did some little small stuff there, but I think we were the first major one to get to actually get some evidence in a big way. And since then, he had another group go in there. They did a YouTube thing where they went in and did some investigating too as well. So I think it's going to be probably a thing that, at least with Paracon, that they'll probably have that this next year for the guests as well, because it is a special, and just the mine itself, the history of it, to experience it. It's the Good Enough Mine Tour. And I'm saying, if you ever go to Tombstone, people forget that there's a whole bunch of mines under that town, and it was actually built on mining. We all think of the OK Corral and the shootout.
Right.
And it is worth the tour, because the tour guides are amazing. And just the experience of actually seeing the history and the ghost.
And the ghost. Lauren, you were there too, right?
I was. Yeah, it was absolutely incredible. I can't wait to go back.
And did you do some research on it now?
A month later.
Have you been researching it or?
I did at the time, yeah. Didn't focus so much on the mine. There were a couple of other locations that were kind of the main focus historically that they wanted me to look at. And we didn't get a ton of notice before we went either, so.
Yeah, the mine was unexpected, because another investigator was supposed to host that.
Right.
Wasn't able to. So it was like, to me, it was a godsend, because I'm like, it was like one of my favorite things ever. But yeah, but they had some good research. They had done some research themselves, just the history of the mine. Mm. And I believe a total during the mine, now they have several mines there, so they have a Good Enough, Tough Nut, and several other ones. Wasn't it total of was it 37 or 38 deaths that had occurred, Lauren? Was it something like that?
Because
it was just a hand pick and candlelight and, you know, 12-hour days in the mine.
And they said those that didn't die in the mine, because the mining accidents were, as you can imagine, safety standards weren't exactly what they are today. So there were a lot of accidents, but they also said the average age of a miner was like 30 something years old, 35 to 40 years old. If they weren't dying actually in the mine, they were definitely, you know, unfortunately dying for their time.
So Jerry had mentioned, you know, that he does well with flashlights. So it'd be fun to talk about the tools of the trade and what you both think works the best, because we've had other groups on that like, a couple of our regulars really like recordings. They really find, we have one that has even a way of doing recordings because he's a sound engineer that's really unique, Jeff Mandel. And so it'd be fun to see what tools each of you like to use and what you think seem to be consistently good tools in the trade. You want to start, Lauren?
Sure. For me, like Jerry, I love using flashlights, and we've gotten some really great flashlight evidence. Also the EMF, that's your tried and true, you know, your K2, those are probably my top three picks. And then just all, you know, Jerry always says it too, it's just yourself. You're your best tool. What you're feeling, what you're seeing, you know, and especially with your team, if you have somebody else, they're feeling and sensing and hearing the same things, I mean, that's great evidence. Mm-hmm. So you're a great tool. You don't have to have these, you know, crazy expensive pieces of equipment to investigate.
I like that part about, because some people that we've had on the show seem to think that they're not psychic, but then when you talk to them, they are. It's because the psychic is a broad word. There's ways people pick things up that are different, so they don't fit into that box, or they just don't trust it. So I really like that you include that. Well, what do you think about that, Jerry?
100%. Because when I knew I had some, like, I don't consider myself psychic, you know, like I think most people, well, I'm not a psychic. Well, I don't sit and do readings, but we do have intuition. We do have, you know, a certain set of skills, but I found on one of my first cases, I experienced my first presence of something in my face. And at the time we actually had a sensitive on the team and we were making contact. It was a guy who had committed suicide in the house. And I was just videotaping it all. And she came, it was always funny, remember Lisa. So Lisa came around and actually hid behind me. I wasn't sure what she was doing, but she went behind me. And as soon as she did, I felt an electric static charge in my face. Like I never felt before. And I said to her, I go, whoa, he's in my face right now. And she said, why do you think I'm hiding behind you? Because it was getting overwhelming for her. Ah. So since that time, I've learned to kind of use that. And what's really fun is I kind of like to be the litmus test. Like I don't convey things because I like to see if someone else says something first. Because I, you know, it's just a thing. Like if we have a sensitive, I'll walk through with them personally and say, hey, are you ready to pick up? But I won't tell any rest, you know, the rest of the team, because I want to see if, you know, if we can validate it. But I always love when you're standing somewhere and you feel something, and you're just going, okay. And then the person next to you goes, oh my God, do you feel it right now? And you're like, okay, yes, I do. Because it's obviously something standing, you know, between us or whatever. So I think the personal, your own personal experience is a huge thing. It'll guide you where to go. I know, you know, with tools, it's what's great about tools, you know, recordings, flashlights, anything that you can present, it then allows you to share that with the non-believer or the client. Because the hard part about psychic activity, and I'm sure a lot of psychics will tell you this, is that, or mediums in general, I can sit in there and tell you that your great Aunt Bessie is standing there behind you. I have nothing to validate it. There's no way I can prove to you that Aunt Bessie's standing behind you. Mm-hmm. But if I put a flashlight or a device behind you and I say, Aunt Bessie, can you turn on the flashlight? And the flashlight goes on. I say, can you turn it off? And I have her do it a few times. Now you'd be maybe more inclined to think, well, maybe Aunt Bessie is standing behind me, or someone's standing behind me. Mm-hmm. Might not be Bessie, but someone's manipulating. And recordings are interesting because, you know, it's funny. Everyone goes out and buys these expensive recording devices and stuff. And my best EVPs have actually come off of my video camera. Mm. And I've got some Class A ones. It was the same house where I had the thing in my face. What we were finding out, all roads started to connect from, we found out later on, some of the things neighbors had said, is that a man back in the 70s had molested his stepdaughter and got her pregnant. And ultimately, when people found out, committed suicide in the house. And we picked up a Class A EVP in the master bedroom. And it was amazing because it literally just said, I cannot watch. Because one of our guys was projecting the energy onto him of like what his stepdaughter would have been going through. Mm. And it kind of happened right around that time. We had another case where grandfather had passed away. Most everything in the house was benevolent. And grandpa used to walk through the house and he'd poke you in the ribs. And you know, and he had a saying that we didn't hear about until after the fact, but he'd poke you in the ribs to get by you. And so people were experiencing getting poked and hearing voices. Well, on my video camera, I picked up, what the hell are you doing? And they identified as grandpa's voice. And what grandpa used to do when he poked you in the ribs, he'd go, what the hell are you doing? Oh. As he walked past you. So it was kind of I'll always remember the guy's reaction when I played it for him. He had to wear the headset. It was very faint, but he threw the headset across the room so fast. He goes, oh, dude, that was grandpa. And he's like, flip it out. And then he said, oh, I'm sorry about your headphones. Like, don't worry about it, dude. It's all good.
That was confirmation.
That's a genuine response. Gotta love that.
You know, we had, and I inevitably, anyone that's seen me in Comic Cons or any conferences knows I'm always going to give out my warning. So if you don't mind, I'll give it now. In this case, everything seemed very benevolent. It seemed like grandma, grandpa, three generations in this house. Except in the son's bedroom, there's something negative. And we started doing investigating there and using flashlights and other equipment, started a question and answer thing. We found out the mom had not told us because I think she was maybe embarrassed by it. So in the questionnaire, she did not mention that she'd used a Ouija board. But in there, we found out the thing that was in there was not a family member. It wasn't a relative. It's something that had been invited there. And then and there, she copped to it that back in the 70s, that was her brother's bedroom. They used to play with the Ouija board on a regular basis. Some pretty nasty stuff came through. They freaked out so much, they actually took the Ouija board down to the Huntington Beach to the fire pits and actually burned it. So that happened in the 70s, and there's still something in that house. Mm. But the good part is we kind of made an agreement. The entity, which identified as a female, wouldn't leave, but we asked her to leave the family alone, and she agreed. And we did do follow-up with them, and they said, yeah, everything's great now. We haven't had any, the weird vibe is gone. So, So just that's my little warning about using things that you don't fully know how to use. You can.
Well, and I think it's not just, I feel bad for Ouija boards. It's because the way people approach them. We once were invited to David Oman's house a long time ago to do a seance with the Ouija board. And, you know, the first thing you don't do is have people drinking. So that was respected.
Were people drinking at David's house? Were they drinking up there?
The people, and there were consequences. And we, you can warn people. I think because it came out as a game. And because I think some Ouija boards are beautiful, like some of the old ones look like pieces of art. But you do whatever, whenever you invite anything in, it seems like you ought to respect, or at least even if you're naive, to say, well, maybe I could be inviting the wrong guests in. So let's make sure we're not, So what do you think about
Pandora's
it, Lauren?
Box. It's like Pandora's box. I totally agree. I think the Ouija board, just like anything else, can be a valuable tool, but you have to know what you're doing. And I think the danger is, like anything, like with any tool, you wouldn't hand a chainsaw to a 3-year-old. I mean, you have to respect whatever it is and know what you're doing, because it can open the door to things that, if you don't know what you're doing, may not be the things you want to open the door to.
Yeah.
Just for the benefit of you guys, to fill in the story of what happened to David's with the Ouija board, is that there was him and there was this big heavyset guy that was a complete non-believer, complete skeptic of all this stuff. And yes, they were definitely indulging. And so we did the whole Ouija board thing, and honestly, nothing much really happened, So we thought, well, that was a dud and we're going home. So David was saying that they went to bed, and the guy lays down in the bed downstairs and he's starting to fall asleep, and he hears this voice say, "You're coming with us," and literally got yanked out of the bed and kind of held up off the floor for a minute, and it deposited back down on the bed. So apparently he became a believer real fast after that.
But again,
just weird stuff, for sure.
Yeah, David's house is unique because we had the opportunity to join him up there one time. And yeah, there's a lot of activity there. We had Beetlejuice went down 3 times on us there.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if Beetlejuice fell on you, but the little Beetlejuice figurine got knocked down. And we set him back up. We jumped up and down on that floor, and we were big guys at the time too. And we're jumping and that thing's not moving. And then we go back and it gets knocked over again. I'm like, yeah, okay. I think that's true, because also when you don't add drinking to that, because we've had cases where people, we have very strict rules about no drinking for our investigators. But we did a case where they were lovely people, but I guess the brother-in-law decided he was going to come over, and they thought it was like a party thing, and he's drinking, and he actually got kind of verbally abusive. Mm. So we actually just not in like any threatening way, but just very disrespectful to what we're doing. So at that time, Don was our team lead at the time. He's like, "Yep, all right, we're wrapping this up." So we wrapped earlier than we would. There was activity, but at the end of the day, it's like, "Hey, man!" And they were such a lovely couple, but they called. They were so apologetic and so appalled that it had happened. But you gotta, there's a time and place for everything.
Yeah, and sometimes the living can be more of an obstacle in paranormal investigations, which we have found to be true, too.
Yeah, definitely.
But also, the neat thing about David Oman's house is I have met some really cool people there through the years that have been friends now that are interested in the paranormal. It really is a hub of interesting people coming through, and I think that probably is true for a lot of places that have a lot of activity that you can connect with like minds, and it was an unexpected pleasure.
Nice. Yeah, it's a cool place. Did you go back into the crawl space? Did you go downstairs?
Oh, the downstairs thing?
Yeah, with the dirt.
Yeah, the dirt. Yeah, a couple times. Yeah, it's been a while since I've been in that part, but yes, we've been friends with David for a very long time, for like almost as long as we've been in LA, so over 20 years, I would say. So.
Wow.
I mean, we were more friends, and our friends really, even though we're tarot card readers into metaphysics, but it's our friends that dragged us in willingly into ghost hunting. So it was one of those things because we knew people that were really into it, and they'd invite us and say, you guys should come. And so it's been really fun that way too. So sort of changing a little bit of the direction, I am curious as to how people become investigators on TAPS. I think you mentioned before the show, that's one of the most popular inquiries you get wanting to be an investigator. What are some of the, I guess, things that you're looking for, and when do you start looking for one?
Well, for us right now, I mean, I'll just say, Ray, we're not looking for any new members right now, just because we have a full slate. But we look at the person's background. What can they contribute to the team? Skill sets. There was times when members of our team, we have members of the team in law enforcement, Secret Service, firefighters, engineers, analysts, people of all different walks of life. But for us, we look for a little bit more of a someone that can be objective and not jump to conclusions, that wants to learn, that wants to help. And at the end of the day, the biggest thing why we're all here is to help people. Mm. We don't do this. We don't charge for this. And if any team out there is charging, please stop. And if anyone needs help, please don't pay someone some ridiculous sum to come and investigate your house. Because we're trying to find answers and we're trying to help people. So someone that can be objective, someone that has a true interest in the field, and someone that's willing to learn. And also someone that's willing to sit and review hours and hours of really boring video and audio footage, but actually do it. Because the one thing I've learned, so many people, they want to go for the fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They want to go out. Oh, this is cool. And then you're like, hey, how's that evidence review coming? Oh, I didn't get anything. Really? Because I was in the same room with you and I got a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But what I would say for those who want to be investigators, you can reach out, check in your local area. There are, if you go to the main TAPS page from the East Coast, there is a thing that says TAPS family, and it'll have a list of the TAPS family member groups within your area.
Mm.
You can always reach out there for some guidance, but you can actually start your own team.
Mm-hmm.
And just the key thing is just really try to go it from a true investigator's mind, be skeptical of everything. I call it being a healthy skeptic, where you're open-minded to it, but every little bump is not paranormal.
Right.
And really start to get together with like-minded people. And if you do reach out, we've had a lot of people reach out, and I've actually pointed some people to some, teams in their area, which has been really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people I've just talked to on the phone and said, hey, well, kind of guided them to start their own, because there's only so many TAPS teams, I guess I want to say. And there is a natural circulation. Like some of our members who were there when I started have moved on to other things. So there are times when we do take people,
mm-hmm.
but I think a lot of times you're better off starting your own team.
Mm-hmm.
But leading it with the integrity of what we do at TAPS. In other words, don't think that every piece of dust entering your body is a demon.
Be a lot of demons around.
yeah.
Dust demons.
Yeah, boy, it's funny. You walk by any security camera, man, there's a lot of demonic activity going on out there.
Lauren, now, our show, we've tried to promote women in the paranormal in different ways, as because we know they're not necessarily being featured on television mainstream, and it still seems to be a little struggle. And you've been involved for a while. So tell me your own journey as a woman investigator, what it's been like, and if you feel like it's progressing, or whatever your thoughts are.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of women, even on our own team, I don't think. Jerry, you can add to this. We had three.
It was always Wade. We had some, but it was always Wade towards men. Yeah.
So definitely it was the boys' club when I joined the team. But I don't know a team, honestly, that's more accepting than our team. I mean, they're amazing. I think it just was coincidence. And I think women too sometimes are hesitant to reach out to teams, probably a little more hesitant because you don't want to be sort of seen as the crazy woman with the ghosts in the house. I mean, that's how I felt. My husband at the time was very logical, you know, it's got to be a wiring issue or a plumbing issue. And, you know, after we have, you know, 7 electricians and 8 plumbers coming out, it's like, okay, dude, we got to, you know. So I think there's a lot of that. I think there's still a little bit of that sort of stigma, if you will. And also I think it's getting better. I'll say that. I think women are... We're getting out there a little bit more. We're not so scared to do it and scared to question things such as paranormal. And it's great. I mean, and we do go to like Jerry was saying, the Comic Cons and things like that. And we're definitely the last few times we've gone, you see a lot more women on teams, which I love. Mm-hmm. I love. And a lot of younger people now too, I think, are sort of getting interested in the paranormal and things like that. And you see women on some of the paranormal shows now too, which is great, where that was mainly, I mean, before you'd see, I don't think there were any shows with women.
There was, you would have like maybe one out of a
batch. Yeah.
Like Amy, you know, Amy was of course,
right.
Now she's got her own show, but yeah, it was very heavily weighted to the male side.
Definitely. Definitely. And also, I mean, let's be real, no offense, Jerry, but, you know, as a female, we're going to places and we're crawling in dirty crawl spaces and, you know, sleeping on the floor of places, and you're laying together in the dark for hours on end, staying the night places. It's like, you know, sometimes you feel like you're in a frat house. So, you know, it's not the most desirable thing sometimes, but... Again, the great thing about it is when you do that for so long, you really do. Now it just feels like a normal thing. And I encourage women to, if this is what interests you, go for it. You know, we can do just as much as the men.
Absolutely. You know, and the other thing is that the men get stereotyped too, even though they have male, psychics, it's usually women psychics and women mediums, and because Michael is a tarot reader, that there's this prejudice that men are not as intuitive, and it's just not true. I mean, it's my experience. Human beings are all intuitive if they want to be, and you can also develop psychic abilities of different kinds. Most people have some disposition towards one of them, is they just have to develop it, is what I would say.
Sure. Yeah. And I think, like you said, you know, they think women are going to, you know, run off and get scared if there's a spider or something, whereas men are the big strong men that are going to go hunt the ghosts, you know? I mean, I do think there is that sort of, you know, again, that kind of stigma, which is a shame.
I think it comes back from the old school idea of investigations, right? If we go even back to the Houdini days, the medium was always a woman.
Mm-hmm. You
know, right. You know, so it's ingrained where everyone's like, it's part of this kind of society that we're trying to grow out of a little bit, like where like, well, a woman has her place. She's the psychic, the sensitive, the medium, the man. And it's like, it's BS. I think that women, I love, we got a lot of women on our team now, and I love the women on our team, because it's sometimes when you're in investigation too, you want that balance of energy. And there'll be times where I'm like, hey, let's all the guys get out of the room, let the girls have this. And something will be more inclined to engage because it's more attracted to that energy. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. Sometimes it's just, they just want to talk to the guys. So I think to me, women are invaluable, and any team that doesn't have women, you need to go out and find some really good qualified, because it benefits your team so much. And Lauren's the last thing. I'm so glad she's part of it. And she and I, she's my travel partner, we drove 8.5 hours to Tombstone twice back and forth. And I didn't want to throw her out of the car, and she didn't want to throw me out of the car. So that says something.
Nobody killed each other. Bonus, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely growing and changing. One of the things I noticed more on Instagram when I first started looking for paranormal groups is there's lots of little tiny groups everywhere around the world seriously investigating. Like, they don't even seem... they have like 300 followers, or they're not all interested in, you know, becoming a TV show or something, which nothing wrong with that, but they seem to be really into their town and they know the history. And it seems to be positively in that way a growing phenomenon, though earlier, Jerry, when you were saying also that could be a negative thing because people aren't really prepared to deal with real people that need a certain kind of awareness to deal with, this is their home and this is, you know, traumatic for some people. So you need that kind of counseling skill, but it seems both positive and negative, the growth in this field.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've met some amazing, amazing people. In fact, when we were in Tombstone, the folks from Goose Flats Paranormal, which is a local team there that kind of, they were lovely. In fact, Laura and I went back up and we did some additional locations with them after Paracon. And I think that it's great when you get into it. And I think ultimately you just have to figure out what it is you're getting to. And if it's ultimately, if your goal is to help people, then I'd say, okay, good. You're in a good place. So understand what it is, how to counsel, how to deal with people that are actually suffering trauma. When you really think about it, because for us, a problem is people think like, hey, we'll go and this will be cool. Oh, dude, that was so neat, man. And you don't understand, those people have to live there.
Yeah.
That room that you just had the experience, that person has to sleep there that night, and they've been dealing with this trauma for a while. So it's trying to make things better from learning how to communicate with them. And also learning how to keep yourself in check. Like, you know, there's times I will tell you where we've had really cool stuff happen and you just got to go, okay, keep it together, because we're here for one purpose right now, and that's to help this family. Mm-hmm. And yes, that was cool, but we also don't know, was it paranormal? Like, until you review your evidence, you don't know if that was paranormal. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of our team founders, he had an experience in a bar where they were talking about, yeah, like we'd come in and the bottles would be thrown all over and stuff. So this place is haunted. So they went in and they set up cameras and stuff, and they went out and grabbed some dinner, and they came back and bottles have been knocked off and broken. Like, oh man, this place is off the hook. This place is haunted. And so, you know, and they told the owner before they reviewed. Then they reviewed the tapes and saw a rat was going along there, knocking the bottles and stuff off. So not paranormal,
no.
Really problem, you know, but that's why it's always very important as an investigator, if you're with these smaller teams, it's exciting, it's great, but do keep your stuff in check until you've had a chance to review everything and really be objective, because like I said, while it might be cool to you, something you say could really trigger the person who's living there or working there. Mm. And you always want to leave. It's like when you go into the National Forest, you know, leave only footprints. You either want to leave it as is or hopefully better, but you never want to leave a place worse. You don't want to go in and stir up stuff and make these people's life worse. And you go out and you can show your friends all the cool footage you have, but you did nothing to help these people. Mm. So if that's what you're doing,
for the wrong reason.
You make, but I, you know, the way I was raised, I don't agree with that, but we all make our own decisions in life, you know?
That's true. I think that's wonderful though. And I think it's a good compass, you know, that keeps you knowing what to do, what not to do. Like you said, having that kind of guide, like I'm here to help, you know, that I am curious for both of you how, since you started investigating, how this has impacted, if it has, your view of death in the afterlife. Do you feel like it has actually opened up to new ideas? Did it just confirm what you already believe? Lauren, what do you think?
Well, I was raised Catholic, so, you know, we believe in spirits, obviously, Holy Spirit. But, you know, I did always sort of wonder, like, can we come back and see our friends and relatives here on Earth after, or is just our soul gone forever and kingdom of and I truly believe now that we can come back and look in on our loved ones, and, you know, that's pretty cool. I definitely, if there was any question about, you know, is there an afterlife, that has definitely been, for me, confirmed. And I think that's, yeah, it definitely, it's a good feeling to me. It's a comforting feeling to know that this, it doesn't end here, you know, that there is more to the next life. This isn't where we stop.
Mm. Very cool. Is your family accepting of that too? You said you had children.
Well, yeah, they live in the haunted house with me. So, yeah. No, we're, you know, come spend some time at my place. And if you weren't a believer, you'll probably leave as one. So, yeah, they're very accepting too. So, they were seeing stuff in the house, gosh, since they could talk, basically. So, yep.
Mm. And Jerry, how about you?
What's up?
How about you?
I was just going to say, speaking of kids. Oh, are you talking to me? go ahead, Jerry.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. It's okay. Everyone's coming out. I'm sorry. So what was the question?
Since you've begun investigating on your journey, how has this impacted your view about death or the afterlife, or has it confirmed things?
Yeah. Definitely. It's definitely, for me, confirmed. I'd always been kind of raised understanding, well, I guess also based on the experience I had as a kid, but, you know, you go through periods of doubt and, you know, I was imagining, and then, you know, we ebb and flow as we evolve. But the one thing I've learned is that, the big thing I've learned is very few times are spirits trapped. I think they just come back because they want to come back. They come and visit places that meant something to them. Like, we get a lot of haunted theaters, but there was no deaths in the theaters, but it was people that were involved in the theater. The same thing I would imagine with, you know, with like lodges, like Elks and Masons and stuff like that. You have people that this was their life. They gave, they did so much cool stuff there. Why wouldn't you come back and visit? And then just on like a way too personal of a note, but I figured I'd share. My mother passed in April, and she was my life. Amazing woman. I was there to the last moment with her, but her birthday was in August, and I thought I was doing okay. You know, you deal with this stuff. And I remember I made a little, nice little memorial video that I put on Facebook for her, and kept it together all day at work. Everything was good. And I went home and I sat there and I watched the video, and I just lost it, like inconsolably lost it. As anyone that's dealt with grief, you understand it comes out of nowhere when least expected, and then ebbs away. But what happened when I did that, I was there sitting there crying, and I told you about the electric charge, how I know when someone's in my presence. I felt an electric charge on this side of my face, on my shoulder. And right then and there, I felt my mother's comfort, and I knew she was there standing there with me and comforting me. And based on the knowledge from all the years of investigating, I was able to identify that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the gifts that was given. So I know she watches over me. She watched over me in life. She's going to watch over me in death. So no, it's given me, I don't really fear it. You know, this is the way station. We're living an experience here to help us grow, but that's eternal. On the other end. So if that makes sense, but yeah.
It does. And that, yeah, thank you for sharing that personal story. I think that for people that have any kind of a loss, when you have something so visceral, it is so comforting And certainly, you know, mediums can play a role in helping people, but to have your own experience is, there's nothing like it, whatever way it comes in your case, you know. Lauren, have you had any experience of people that have passed in your life and coming back to you?
I did, my grandfather. And he was like my father. Like I adored this man, just my favorite person in the whole world. And he had passed from brain cancer, and had a couple of experiences with him. And he literally was a rocket scientist. He was a nuclear physicist. So he was very scientific, and he did not believe in ghosts or anything crazy like that, you know? And, so he was in hospice, and he, at that point, he couldn't really speak and, you know, wasn't really all there at that point. He was just on the morphine to keep him comfortable and just kind of waiting to go. But at one point he was laying in bed and he opened his eyes really wide and looked up into the corner of the room and got a big smile on his face and says, "Oh, hey there." Mm-hmm. And that was it. And closed his eyes. And I don't think he spoke much, if at all, after that, but that was really interesting. And then the day after he had passed, you know, the whole family's gathered in my grandmother's living room. And my uncle, who is not somebody who really believed in that stuff, you know, he's a big biker guy. And he sort of turned pale and gets up and walks around the corner into my grandmother's office and comes back. And, you know, he looked like he'd seen a ghost. Eyes wide, you know, and he had thought it was my fiance at the time, but it, you know, he said it was very clearly, it looked like OD was my grandfather's name. He said it was him. I was just trying to convince myself it wasn't. And then the phone rang, and at that time they still had answering machines, you know, and you could hear the answering machine greeting when somebody would call. Mm-hmm. And the phone had rang, and the answering machine greeting that he had recorded with his voice like years prior, that hadn't been on the machine forever, answered. So just little things like that. Like, I know
he's around. Yeah, the whole telephone connections, really. I've heard this from a couple other people too. That's pretty wild, but it makes sense. It's an electrical device that they can come through. And, you know, when you think of the tools that you use for ghost hunting, electricity seems to be a key.
Yep. And he was, you know, he was a science guy, so he loved all the techie stuff. So that was right up his alley. So I have no doubt that that's how he comes to people.
I think there's a book, I forget the name of it. It was a collection of stories like with your grandfather, where people at the end of their life in hospitals see things and talk to people. Like my grandmother could see somebody when she was dying. She saw her sister Lily, and she never talked about Lily ever. And she would just, and she was, I think she was open to this, but they were having a conversation. I mean, it was so, I was like watching this, you know, sitting in the room. I was like, wow, that's really cool. You know, and it's reassuring to the relatives, I think, too.
100%. And that's not uncommon.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. That book collected a lot of stories about it. I forget the name of it. I read it years ago.
Before my mom went into the final stages, we were talking, and she said, "Oh, Virginia came and visited me today." And I was like, really? She goes, "Yeah, Virginia and your dad and Al and Manny and your Uncle Bill were standing in the doorway." I said, "Well, that's nice. You know, I thought maybe it was just part of the, you know, you know, whatever, you know." And I was like, "Oh, well, that's really nice. They came to visit." And, but what was interesting is that was the beginning. Like, she was already in hospice, but that was kind of the beginning, the downturn. And for anyone that's experienced, everyone, I know it's a little bit different, but when you're in hospice, you know, you do get to that point where they go into, I call it like the non-responsive kind of comatose stage. So just prior to that, I checked on her, and she was sleeping a lot, of course. And then I hear her yell, "Billy." And so I go running in, and my Uncle Bill, her younger brother, she's looking right over my shoulder as if he's standing there. And so I said, "Okay, Uncle Bill, if you're here, please hang out, make sure she gets there safely and all that." And the last, throughout that day, she called out two or three more times, Bill and Billy. And those were her last words. And then she went into the comatose state. So I know, that's why when Laura's saying that and you're saying, it's just, they're waiting. And that's what I can't imagine that that's some, I know they'll say, well, it's just the brain chemicals doing it. Okay.
No, I don't think so.
I know they're there. They're there waiting. And I think when she saw the group of them, they were all just, they were all smiling, she said. Mm. They were all smiling at her. So they were all just waiting, like, okay, we're here. And when the time's ready, we're going to take you with us.
Well, thank you so much. We're running out of time now. In fact, we're a little over. So I want to thank you both for coming on. Did you have something, a last thing to say, Lauren?
Oh, I was just saying, but what a comfort, you know? I mean, when we leave here, we've certainly got a great welcoming party, right?
Yes, absolutely. So thank you so much, both of you. I know you have a website, tapswestcoast.org, which we posted on our website. If people do have a haunting or something they want to connect with you, they can contact you there. But thank you both for coming on the show.
It was a blast.
And thank you all for listening in. Join us next time as we continue to explore the esoteric and the obscure together. Have a wonderful week.